Look at her. She's rocking heels in the dirt.
Platforms for finding the right influencers to work with on social media. I thought something like that existed for podcasts.
Yeah.
But it didn't. 70% of people say that they actually find out about new products and services from podcast ads. But when we looked a little bit more into it, we realized that out of 700,000 podcasts that are out there, only 15% monetize.
Yes.
1/5, right? So a very small percentage. And right now, if you're a brand that wants to reach to your target audience through podcasts, it's very difficult to find a good match. We want brands to talk to us. We don't want them to sell to us. We want them to talk to us and to listen to us and to understand us. And podcasts is a fantastic medium to do that. Sentiment, word clouds, and correlations between different topics. And based on that, we make, or the platform makes, smart recommendations for brands and what kind of podcast they should work with. Yeah. So I started my own little magazine. So I basically took old magazines.
What was the name of your magazine?
I don't remember. It was like about animals. So I would take like
Honest
old
Animals?
Yes, probably something like that. I let my friends read it for a fee.
I love it.
So relatively recently, actually, now it's so cool to be an entrepreneur, but back in the days, nobody talked about it. I never really thought about wanting to run my own business and hustles. That I remember was when I was, I think, about 14, tourist info for one of the shopping malls in my home city in Finland. And we found out who was the marketing manager. We went to talk to her. I think it would be a great idea for your shopping mall to have a tourist info. She actually loved the idea. So she hired us for like a month, and we had our own little stall.
Wow.
And we
had entrepreneurship is, you see a problem that you have, it or something that bothers you, and you go and you make a solution to it.
Adversity.
Oh, it's a Finnish city called Lappeenranta. Try to pronounce
Lappeenranta.
That. Union, of course, of like business students. And I was actually an editor-in-chief of our student magazine, but I was elected to my city council.
Wow.
Of Lappeenranta. So I ran like a campaign and everything. And I was one of the youngest members. I was 23.
Yeah, that's like super young.
Yeah, maybe one day will be great to have, you know, my own business or do something on my own and see what opportunities Singapore provides. And we went there and just like really fell in love with Singapore, monitoring, social media monitoring, and analytics and so on. And I started as a sales consultant, never done sales before, never done business in Southeast Asia or Asia in general.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty steep learning curve.
So talk about some of the challenges.
I mean, I just couldn't sell. Like that was the big, like in the beginning, like my first six months, I missed every single month of my quotas. Actually get the job and start and be like, I suck at this. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
What is it that I can't crack? And it was pretty hard as well. Like, Anna, at the interview, you were here.
Yeah.
Now you're here.
Right.
What happened? And I was like, oh, thanks for visualizing act together. But they're like, we're a sales organization, so if you're not gonna get your act together, we can't really keep you here.
Yes.
Right, because like you need
so
to
they
sell.
Gave you a they gave you an ultimatum.
Yeah,
and
that's
true.
Because I'm like, well, if I can't do this, then I can't, then so be it, right? Like, I'm just gonna do my best, but now I have no pressure anymore. Like, it's out there.
Yeah.
And that, I think, just, I don't know, something just clicked. I started to get in a few smaller deals. Then I was so happy. The following month, I think I hit like 200% of my target. So something clearly mentally was just like released.
Yes.
And yeah, then I actually got a promotion very quickly after that. So when you know what you're doing, you're good at it, but you know, you're not really learning and developing. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I wanted to do something else. So I actually quit my job and started doing a few of my own projects and got to know the startup ecosystem in Singapore a little bit better.
Yeah.
And realized that it was very buzzing. Something grounds up would be really nice, some kind of a movement or something to help young people to actually go out there and start businesses and learn about entrepreneurs. So we started Slush Singapore 2016. Yeah, I then ended up running it for 3 years, actually. So we ended up, that was the seal for me of being like, yeah, I can't go back and work for anybody else anymore.
Yeah.
I want to start something on my own.
Once you got the taste of freedom.
Yeah. Actually, 2019, I then joined a startup generator program in Singapore.
Tell me just a little bit about that, because I want to know what, you know, how you got here.
Yeah, and actually I had like tons of ideas before this book, but the first original one was like a personalized CRM. I think the problem was trying to figure out how to monetize that. Went through a lot of iterations of a whole bunch of different ideas. I had to do a little side hustle. Mm-hmm. And we're like, what can we do together? Like, we're not going to be building a business together, but what else can we do? And we decided to do a podcast. That's how I met my co-founder, Malik.
Malik
is my co-founder and our CTO of Zvook. So I call him the tech wizard because he's literally the one who's building our platform. So an elevator, and the elevator gets stuck. So we got stuck for 20 minutes in an elevator.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, since we got this time, like, let's just get to know each other. And we talked a lot. And I think
co-founder, we will find where you're going to be in an elevator or a taxi or a bus, and we will actually shut down the vehicle. All you have to do is pay our fee. It's a high-end service, like $1,250 per event.
You know, 70 floors up, like a really tall skyscraper, you just interview them in an elevator.
And I have to have great elevator music to accompany.
Oh, that's the bread and butter. Yeah. Trying to find a co-founder, they somehow really center around the idea.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's about an idea. Like, I could build with Malik anything, and I was asking them a lot of questions, and then we basically hustled together one podcast brand.
Yes.
Match.
Yes.
So we got our first client. Actually,
did you feel like you didn't even deserve a fee? Like, this was just a...
Yeah, no, we didn't take any fee. Yeah. Like, no, it
this
was
is
just
the
like,
first thing that we want to prove that it works.
Exactly. 2 weeks after we got the funding, we were on the plane on our way to New York. Hey, in the past month, the top 100 female podcasters were talking about these topics, and this was the sentiment, and this is how these topics actually were B2B. So basically, our clients are brands and companies that want to find podcasts to work with, and podcasts are basically our whole new generation that's kind of evoking, and we call it the earbud generation.
Yeah.
Right? So everybody, if you look around and on subway or on the street, give a voice to everybody, right? And I think that's what's really empowering about this whole medium, is that everybody has a voice.
What are your biggest challenges right now?
And everything is a priority. Everything is urgent. Every critical thing for me to do, is this bringing us forward? Is this adding the most value to our business as it is right now? I think that's really the most challenging part.
Anna, how do you think you have grown as a CEO?
I've become much more confident. I've become... It doesn't mean that I know better, but it means that I'm more okay with decisions that I make. I still do a lot of mistakes, but I'm okay with that. And that's a feeling that's very empowering. Because then I can focus and channel my mental capacity on not worrying. There's the streets of New York in my heels. It was a lot of fun.
Okay. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Hunter.
Bye-bye. Hello, startup hunters. Thank you guys so much for listening. This podcast would be nothing without you. And also, this podcast is a startup, so I need all the help that I can get. Would you please leave me a good review in the App Store? This would be huge. That's it. On to the episode.
Bye.
Welcome to Startup Hunter. I am here with Anna of Zvook, which is...
You are what you listen to.
So it's an audio podcast platform to connect brands with podcasters. And before we even get too far into your day-to-day of Zvook, what I want to know, Anna, is where were you born and what did your parents do?
So yeah, I was born in St. Petersburg. I lived there until I was six, and then moved to Finland, and you know, grew up in Finland, went to school there, went to do my university studies, did my master's in Finland, and once I done my master's, I basically moved away from Finland and kind of ventured into the big world. My parents actually were not like entrepreneurs at all. So my parents actually had very kind of traditional careers. My mom's a teacher, and my dad by profession is actually a sea captain.
Wow.
So yeah, when I was a little girl, he would actually be away a lot and he was sailing
Did
all over the world.
Did he ever take you somewhere?
No, he couldn't.
Never.
No. But I visited him on his ships whenever he was home. So that was pretty exciting. And I think I must have gotten that gene, that adventure gene from him, you know? So I actually haven't lived in Finland for the past 9 years already. I've been all over the world.
Yes.
And yeah, I guess it comes from the heritage.
Now, but let's reel it back. So neither of your parents were entrepreneurs, or did they have a little side hustle?
Well, my dad towards the end, I mean, before he retired, he actually kind of quit his job and he went into a completely different field. He started building houses, actually.
So this is entrepreneurial.
Maybe. Yeah, that is very entrepreneurial, but it's never something that we talked about at home. He was never like, I want to be an entrepreneur and do this thing. It was just, that's what he, you know, got interested in and decided that, well, you know, rather than going, you know, from 9 to 5, because at that point he was working at the, like, you know, had an office job. And he was like, well, rather than doing that, I might just do something that I really enjoy and make a little living. And so he did that at a relatively kind of like senior age before he retired. So that was a pretty big jump. I think a lot of people don't do these things anymore. Like, the older you get, the more risk averse you get. And he kind of,
but it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't have to be, and I'm very proud of him actually for doing that.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's huge, awesome.
It's a huge move. So here's another angle that I want to come at. What's the earliest hustle that you can remember? Did you sell cookies as a kid? Did you do something, you know, where you're hustling?
Yeah, actually, I did a lot of things when I was in, you know, when I was like 7, 8, 9 years old. I actually did little kind of like clubs at my home. So there would be like, we would do something with our hands, and I would invite my friends, and they would pay me like a couple of marks that was then by in Finland, the currency. And they would like, yeah, pay me a little bit, and I would basically teach them how to do certain different skills. And then I was really good at writing. Mm. So I started my own little magazine. So I basically took old magazines.
What was the name of your magazine?
I don't remember. It was like about animals. So I would take like
Honest Animals?
Yes, probably something like that. And I would take like old magazines, like recycled magazines, and I would cut out different articles, yeah, and different pictures, and I would put them together in my own magazine, and I would let my friends read it for a fee.
I love it. Oh my God, I love this. So, did this turn into a big magazine empire?
No, I think I did one issue. But I still have it, actually.
That's,
or my parents
fantastic.
Have it.
Oh, if you have a picture of it, send it to me. So,
but I never really thought about, like, we never talked at home about like entrepreneurship or like doing, yeah, your own business or, yeah, none of that. Like, it wasn't a thing, and obviously, like, it wasn't a thing until relatively recently. Actually, now it's so cool to be an entrepreneur, but back in the days, nobody talked about it. I never really thought about wanting to run my own business. I was actually very much into going and building myself a really high-flying career in business. I wanted to be a CMO of some big company, have an international career, and be this businesswoman. And I never really thought about starting something of my own, really.
So here's, let's go a little chronologically. Mm. So you do your animal magazine when you're a child, and what's like the next hustle you can remember? Maybe something when you're 13 or 15 or 16, or a position of leadership. Did you run any clubs in school, or were you a captain of a team or something like that?
Yeah, all possible clubs. I was on them, on the board. I was running a whole bunch of like different student classes, student unions, and things like that in my youth. I was very interested in kind of, you know, at that point, maybe like student and youth politics. And in Finland, actually, we had fantastic opportunities to do that. Like, young people have a lot of opportunities to, you know, have a say. And so I took a lot of those opportunities. But one of the earliest, like, proper kind of jobs and hustles that I remember was when I was, I think, about 14, me and my friend wanted to get a summer job. And, you know, we weren't really interested in anything that was available for, you know, young people at that point, like selling ice cream and whatnot. So we actually initiated a little tourist info for one of the shopping malls, uh-huh, in my home city in Finland. And we found out who was the marketing manager, and we went to talk to her. And it was like two 14-year-old girls being like, hey, hey, we think it would be a great idea for your shopping mall to have a tourist info where all these tourists that are trying to find a particular shop or trying to find something in particular that they're looking for, we can actually advise them in different languages. And we're like, we speak English and Swedish and all these different languages, so we could help. And she actually loved the idea. So she hired us for like a month, and we had our own little stall.
Wow.
And we had like t-shirts and everything, and we were basically the info girls of
the
that mall.
Marketing manager, you know, she clearly saw something in you. She knew you were 14 years old, but she wanted to let you blossom in some way. And that's amazing.
Yeah, and it felt really cool because we came up with that idea ourselves. We did everything from scratch. And again, we still never really thought that, oh, we're being very entrepreneurial. We were like, this is fun. We want to do this. And, you know, there wasn't an opportunity to do that. So we just went on and suggested and created it.
That's what entrepreneurship is. You see a problem that you have or something that bothers you, and you go and you make a solution to it. And
absolutely.
And here you are. You've got traction.
And it's interesting how like these things, so we ended up working with that mall for many years to come. They had all sorts of different projects that they involved us in later on. So one thing always leads to another. And that's what was also really interesting. So we kind of got in with one angle, and then we ended up collaborating for many, many years.
Wow. So let's get to university. Where did you go to university?
Oh, it's a Finnish city called Lappeenranta. Try to pronounce
Lappeenranta.
Oh, yeah, pretty good. So that's my home city, and that's where I went to university, studied for 6 years. So in Finland, you do like your bachelor and master's, like right
back to back.
Yeah, back to back. Yeah,
and did
exactly.
You study marketing?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So it's like international marketing was my major. How did you guess that?
So talk about some like interesting stories from your college hustles.
So
you have to have some.
So I was on board of our student union, of course, of like business students. And I was actually an editor-in-chief of our student magazine.
Yeah.
So something that came out monthly. And up until that point, that magazine had actually been produced like black and white.
Yes.
And it has just, I mean, nobody really cared that much. I mean, it was something that came out once a month, like people read it, but it was just, you know, you were just supposed to do that. And I was like, no, we have to be a little better. So I actually researched a little bit and got some really good quotes for, to have it out in full colors.
Yes.
And I was the first editor-in-chief that actually published it in colors, and everybody was like, wow, like this is what it could actually be. And the readership went up. And so, yeah, that was kind of, again, like one of the really cool hustles. I do remember, though, that every time I had a deadline and I was putting, so I was doing everything, like writing some of the stories, recruiting some other
staff members.
Yeah, like, and everybody obviously, it was like a volunteer project, right? So everybody did that on their own free time, so to say. And it was a hustle, and then putting together.
I was in a very similar position, I know it.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. So just before the deadline, I mean, I would be up until like 4 a.m. putting the magazine together, be like, why am I doing this?
Oh my gosh, you didn't have to be up to 4 a.m.
No, but I mean, that's what you do, right? Like it's somehow, you know, you end up, I was very bad at saying no to things. So I said yes to all these different projects. And then I went into local politics, actually.
Ah, so you were a professional politician?
That was one of the side hustles, but I was elected to my city council.
Wow.
Of Lappeenranta. So I ran like a campaign and everything. And I was one of the youngest members. I was 23.
Yeah, that's like super young.
Yeah. Well, right now, Finland actually has the youngest prime minister in the world.
Who's like 19?
Yes, something like that.
Thunberg will be the prime minister of Sweden.
Oh, I'm sure. No, but I mean, there were a lot of different kind of hustles and different projects. We organized a lot of events as students. And I mean, being a college student in Finland is amazing because you study about 30% of the time, and then you do a whole bunch of other parties and projects and whatnot for the rest of the time. It was a great time, and I got a lot of, I think, inspiration from the people that I was, you know, studying with and working with. And I guess then kind of for the first time started thinking a little bit about like, yeah, maybe one day it would be great to have, you know, my own business or do something on my own.
So how long did you stay as an elected official?
That was for about, I think, a couple of years, because then I graduated and I moved abroad.
Oh, you were elected official while you were in school?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So I did that like on the side. And I actually, like one of the things. And I was actually the one who, so I initiated back in the days, and I mean, now it sounds like I'm very old, which I don't feel like that, but back in the days, like in my city council, all the meetings were open to public, but you'd have to go there and sit there and listen.
Yeah.
And I was like, we should actually do like a live streaming.
Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you,
no.
But I think the interesting thing about being an elected official and entrepreneurship is you see problems, right? Like the street has cracks or whatever these problems are. And as this person with initiative, you're like, I want to fix that problem. It's so entrepreneurial.
Exactly.
It can be.
It's actually a very interesting, I think, I mean, you're absolutely right though, but like very few people draw the equation between politics and entrepreneurship, it should be more entrepreneurial, yeah. I think, even the politics, right?
Well, you graduate university and then you went somewhere?
Yeah, so I moved to Germany. So just before I graduated, I did my exchange studies in Stuttgart.
Uh-huh.
Did one semester there, finalized my thesis, came back and graduated right away and moved to Berlin.
Yeah.
So I love Germany. I studied German at school, so I wanted to prep my language skills and moved there, worked at a little private German company in marketing. I mean, to be fair, like I had just gotten my master's, but the actual job that I was doing was like probably like intern level.
Uh-huh.
But I did that in German, which was exciting and it was challenging enough.
Yes.
So that was great. But I stayed there for 6 months and then I had a chance to move to the other side of the world that I'd never been to, which is Asia.
Yeah.
And to Singapore.
So that's amazing. Like, you must have met somebody and they extended you an offer. And
yeah, so I my partner at the time, or my boyfriend at the time, had a chance to go to Singapore for 6 months.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that's amazing. Like, let's go together, because, you know, I'd love to explore and see what opportunities Singapore provides. And we went there and just like really fell in love with Singapore, with Southeast Asia, and just with that vibe and all these opportunities and the weather.
Uh-huh. And you like the weather?
I love the weather. Yeah. And then, yeah, we just ended up staying. Like, we kind of extended from 6 months. It became like a year, then 2 years, then five years.
And you had a job.
So then I found it. I just like started sending out applications. I sent tons of applications. And then, yeah, I got a job at an online media analytics company.
Mm-hmm.
That did like online media monitoring, social media monitoring, and analytics and so on. And I started as a sales consultant. Never done sales before.
Uh-huh.
Never done business in Southeast Asia or Asia in general.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty steep learning curve.
So talk about some of the challenges.
I mean, I just couldn't sell. Like, that was the big, like in the beginning. Like my first six months, missed every single one of my quotas.
But here's the thing. You were able to sell your Anna's Animals. I know that's my name. You were able to sell that magazine. You know, you were able, so you have it in you. And maybe this was just a learning curve. Like,
hey, well, exactly. But I mean, you know, someone like me who's used to being good and being the best,
right,
and being successful,
yeah,
and like doing things. And I thought too, I was like, yeah, you know what? Like, sales is something I could really do. And then to actually get the job and start and be like, I suck at this. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
What is it that I can't crack? And it was pretty hard as well. Like, I think mentally, like at some point I was just, you know, I mean, when things are not going according to your plans, it kind of eats up that momentum,
mm-hmm,
right? It's so easy to be successful and good when things are going well, because,
yes,
it feeds you and you get energy and you get confidence. And when the opposite happens, it eats up your confidence and you're like, I don't even know if maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I suck. Like, what's wrong? And it was really funny. I had like, I remember this one chat so vividly with one of my regional directors after a few months, and he was a really nice guy. They were very supportive at the company, but he was like, Anna, at the interview, you were here.
Yeah.
Now you're here.
Right.
What happened? And I was like, oh, thanks for, thanks for visualizing that. But then eventually, you know, I just somehow thought, I mean, they gave me a couple of months to kind of get my act together, but they're like, we're a sales organization, so if you're not going to get your act together, we can't really keep you here, yes. Right? Because like, you need
so
to sell.
So they gave you an ultimatum.
Yeah.
And this probably lit a fire under you.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that was a fire, but also somehow released a lot of pressure because I'm like, well, if I can't do this, then I can't. Then so be it, right? Like, I'm just going to do my best, but now I have no pressure anymore. Like, it's out there.
Yeah.
And that, I think, just, I don't know, something just clicked. I started to get in a few smaller deals. The next month I hit my first target, which I think was month six. So happy. The following month I think I hit like 200% of my target. So something clearly mentally was just like released.
Yes.
And yeah, then I actually got a promotion very quickly after that. I got my own little team and I ended up staying for 3+ years, was very successful in sales, and that became my thing.
Wow.
And I still love it a lot. Like,
so you know what really I think is true is to be a good CEO, you have to be good at selling. You don't have to be the best salesperson, but if you know you see your goal out there, how do I get my goal? I have to sell it somehow.
Yep.
And you know, to get that first customer is everything. So I think we're really at the point where in the show where we can start transitioning. And what I'd like to know is, you were in Singapore for 9 years?
8 years.
And did you start Zvuk immediately after, or how did Zvuk come to be?
So actually in between, I had another little period of time when I already kind of got into entrepreneurship. So I quit my job at some point because I was like, you know, I at that point I had, you know, things were going well. And, you know, when you work in sales, you make nice money and everything. So it was good. But the one thing that I didn't get anymore was kind of like being challenged, right? So when you know what you're doing, you're good at it, but you know, you're not really learning and developing. And so I decided I wanted to do something else. So I actually quit my job and started doing a few of my own projects and got to know the startup ecosystem in Singapore a little bit better.
Yeah.
And realized that it was very buzzing. So much, you know, this whole entrepreneur and startup boom started evolving in Singapore. And there was a lot of buzz, but there was still a lot of attitudes towards, you know, maybe a very, I guess, traditional Asian thinking that, you know, if you're a young person, you graduate with good grades, you should be a lawyer,
yes,
doctor, or banker.
Sure.
And I thought, you know, something grounds up would be really nice, some kind of a movement or something to help young people to actually go out there and start businesses and learn about entrepreneurship and you know, just get excited. And so what I ended up getting involved in is something called Slush, which is actually a big tech startup event and festival in Finland,
mm-hmm,
that has been organized for I think 12 years now in Helsinki at the end of November. It's a massive 20,000 person event. Everybody from the whole world is flying down, startups, investors, you know, media.
Yes.
And the whole point is really kind of to celebrate entrepreneurship and bring different angles into this whole conversation. But it's all done by young entrepreneurs, students, and the kind of the grounds up movement. So it's a completely non-for-profit organization and a non-for-profit event.
Yeah.
And so I was involved in actually starting that in Singapore.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we started Slush Singapore 2016. I then ended up running it for 3 years actually. So we ended up doing 3 events. It wasn't as big in Singapore, so we had about 3,000 attendees.
Yeah, but so important.
Yeah, we worked with a lot of community partners, accelerators, and universities in Singapore, Singapore government as well. Everybody was super supportive, and I think it was a really cool example of what you can do when you gather a lot of passionate people around you, and you create something that looks like you and feels like you and is done by you. So it was like, you know, done for the entrepreneurial community by that same community and not by someone else. So yeah, that was a very exciting time. And kind of, I think that was the seal for me of being like, yeah, I can't go back and work for anybody else anymore.
Yeah.
I want to start something on my own.
Once you got the taste of freedom,
Yeah.
Freedom was more important to you than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like irrationally, maybe.
Well, I mean, yeah, that was definitely part of it. And then beginning of this year, actually, 2019, I then joined a startup generator program in Singapore. And I knew at that point that I wanted to build a business, but I wanted to find a co-founder. And this program.
So you wanted a co-founder before you even knew what the idea was?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I actually, well, that's not exactly true. I did have an idea. It didn't turn out to be ever, it was not Zvook. it was a completely different idea. It didn't turn out to be a very good idea.
Well, tell me just a little bit about that, because I want to know what, you know, how you got here.
Yeah, and actually I had like tons of ideas before Zvook, but the first original one was like a personalized CRM.
Yeah.
So basically, now you exchange a lot of business cards, some of your contacts are on LinkedIn, wherever, but you forget who you met.
Yes.
You forget how you're supposed to, like maybe you should drop someone a note after a month and you forget that and it's all over the place. So I wanted to build that.
I had the same idea.
Oh, really? There you go.
I actually started.
Why didn't you build it?
Because I've built so many things and I know how much energy it takes to even get something off the ground and then even go for escape velocity. So like, I sort of pulled myself back from it because it didn't seem like it was that much of a problem, specifically because I have tools like, the only tool I need is really Gmail's schedule send.
Yeah.
When somebody sends me an email and they say, I'm really busy right now, and this just happened, and they're like, I'm busy this season, so I'll schedule that for like 3 months from now. And just to get to know, isn't that what you said? To get to know as fast as possible?
Yeah, kind of. But then also I had all these ideas that if you're actually going to be traveling to, say, Sydney, and you have contacts in Sydney, it could prompt you and say, why don't you schedule a meeting with this and that person because they're actually based in Sydney and you haven't talked to them in 6 months or whatever. So all these different things. Yeah, yeah. So like basically, yeah, personalized CRM. I think the problem was trying to figure out how to monetize that.
Uh-huh.
But before I knew any of that, I was like, yeah, that's something I want to build, but I want a co-founder. I don't want to do it on my own.
Yeah.
And I joined this program called Antler, which is basically helping you find a co-founder. So they take 100 really smart individuals. Oh, someone's having a party. So they basically take like 100 individuals from all over the world that are aspiring entrepreneurs and put them together in a program.
The slush thing, the 100 entrepreneurs?
No, that was a different, no. So,
what was the 100 entrepreneurs program?
So that was basically, so it's a startup generator program called Antler.
Uh-huh.
And they basically gather 100 aspiring entrepreneurs and help them find a co-founder, validate an idea, do a lot of sparring back and forth, and then they actually invest in the most promising ideas.
Yeah, so it's like an accelerator incubator.
Kind of, yeah, but a very, very early stage where you come in, you don't even have to have an idea, you don't have to have a co-founder,
which is like really cool.
Nothing, which is very cool. This is exactly the stage where I was at. So I joined the program in Singapore and kind of went through a lot of iterations of a whole bunch of different ideas with a whole bunch of different amazing people. And that's how I met my co-founder, Malik.
Malik
is my co-founder and our CTO of Zvook. So I call him the tech wizard because he's literally the one who's building our platform.
So how, like, did you come to Malik and say, I know about brands and podcasts, or like, how did the idea for Zvook come around?
Well, thanks. Well, there's like an official and an unofficial story, and I'm gonna tell the unofficial.
Thank you.
I knew you were gonna say that. So we, throughout the program, I met obviously a whole bunch of really interesting people.
Look at her, she's rocking heels in the dirt.
So I met three really amazing female entrepreneurs, and we became really close group of four girls who would meet up regularly for, you know, some wine and talks about entrepreneurship and business and whatnot.
Yeah.
And we decided to do a little side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, what can we do together? Like, we're not going to be building a business together, but what else can we do? And we decided to do a podcast. Right? I mean, that's natural. And what do you do when you decide to do a podcast? Is you obviously book a trip to Bali to record the podcast, right?
Okay, sure. Sure. Why not?
I mean, you know, we thought that's like step number one.
So okay, we nice did... Airbnb in Bali.
Yeah, it's really nice. And I said, hey, I'm going to find us some brands, some sponsors. Like, who wouldn't want to sponsor our amazing new podcast where we drink wine and talk about business?
Yes.
Yeah. And I went online and I was trying to find, okay, this is starting to be like challenging in heels.
Yeah.
You're challenging me on a whole new level.
Look at this.
So I went online and I was trying to look for a platform that would help me, you know, find brands that wanted to work with podcasts. Just like you have, you know, platforms for finding the right influencers to work with on social media. I thought something like that existed for podcasts.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
Ah.
But I stumbled upon a lot of really interesting research and studies and articles about podcasting space. And I realized that it's a very up and coming, new, exciting medium. I'd obviously listen to podcasts myself.
What are some of your top three favorite podcasts?
Oh, How I Built This.
Of course.
For sure.
Of course. This is just, this is how I'm building this, but this is also comedians in cars getting coffee for startups.
Exactly.
It's a whole other thing.
I am also, I mean, I'm listening. I love everything that Gimlet produces. I just love their podcasts altogether. So I've listened to Startup, like every single episode. I'm also now listening to a really cool podcast called Catch and Kill by Ronan Farrow.
Yes,
about his investigation
yes.
into like Harvey Weinstein. I'm also sometimes listening to podcasts in other languages. Like I'm listening to one in Swedish called Framgångspodden, which
you
is like a...
You speak Swedish.
Well, I'm supposed to because I'm from Finland and it's our second official language.
Oh, I didn't know
that. So I'm trying to keep it up by listening to some podcasts. And then obviously through my work, I listen to a whole bunch of just different ones. If there are podcasts that who we work with, I'll try to always listen at least one episode of them as well.
Let's maybe take a lesson.
I've never done this.
This is fantastic.
I should know how to do this because I lived in Asia for 8 years.
This is a startup right here because, you know, next winter they're going to have 100 people here in the winter.
Oh.
You know, they're like building momentum.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's true.
Wow, look at these steps. This is amazing. Look at that. Can you see? I can't see anything.
I can't see. There's like, yeah, it's a good exercise. In heels, heels.
The steps are okay?
The steps are fine, yeah. It's like way easier than the mud.
Okay.
So basically I didn't find a platform like that.
Wow.
and got really excited about the whole space. And once we came back from the trip, I actually started researching more. I realized that there's actually, you know, a huge momentum right now that's building up around podcasts as a medium. Every third American listens to podcasts on a monthly basis.
Uh-huh.
You know, 70% of people say that they actually find out about new products and services from podcast ads. But when we looked a little bit more into it, we realized that out of 700,000 podcasts that are out there, only 15% monetize.
Yes.
1/5, right? So a very small percentage. And right now, if you're a brand that wants to reach to your target audience through podcasts, it's very difficult to find a good match.
Uh-huh.
And find the right podcast to work with and find the right kind of audience for
but
you.
But there's a lot of podcasts out there that are probably relevant.
Exactly. And there's a long tail of really fantastic content.
I like the drier looking stuff.
With, you know, a highly engaged audience. That is not able to monetize and that brands never find.
Okay, so you recognize the problem space.
Mm-hmm.
You recognize that there is a market out there. And like, did you go to Malik and say, you know, we need to build this? Like,
Well, it was, so we kind of got talking at one of the events within the program, and he was like, hey, I've heard that you're like looking into this podcasting space, and I'd heard many, many good things about him as, you know, a tech guy and being one of the best in our cohort, as a product person and developer. And so we agreed that we just, you know, get together and talk. And it was really funny because the first time we actually, you know, were supposed to talk, we were going to a conference room a few floors up. We got get into an elevator, and the elevator gets stuck. So we got stuck for 20 minutes in an elevator.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, since we got this time, like, let's just get to know each other. And we talked a lot, and I think that was a great icebreaker as well, right? Because if you're looking for a co-founder and you can be stuck with someone in an elevator for 20 minutes and like it's not awkward and you just like get along really well, like it's a pretty good sign that, you know.
I have an idea for a new startup. So if you have a potential co-founder, we will find where you're going to be in an elevator or a taxi or a bus, and we will actually shut down the vehicle. All you have to do is pay our fee. It's a high-end service, like $1,250 per event. And you know, then you can like be locked in an elevator with a co-founder.
That's genius. And I think you can start a new series as well. It's like not Walkcast, but like Elevator Cast.
Yeah.
Where you could just be stuck with people for like, you know, 70 floors up, like a really tall skyscraper. You just interview them in an elevator.
And I have to have great elevator music to accompany.
Oh, that's the bread and butter. Yeah.
So this is amazing though. You got stuck in an elevator, and I think it's fate. Like there's no other way to describe it to me.
Exactly. Like, and we were laughing about it. We said like, if we're actually gonna make this is gonna be our real story of how we met. Well, we then got rescued from the elevator, went to a conference room and continued for another couple of hours and just talked about the idea. But also talked a lot about what kind of a business do we want to build, right? Like what kind of how do we see things like hiring a team and, you know, our company culture and, you know, just a lot of the things about like working habits and our goals and aspirations and why we're doing this. And so we kind of realized that we're on the same page with a lot
and
of things.
I think that was really smart, actually, because the best metaphor I have is like it's getting married. And it's a very similar conversation, you know, like, do you want kids, do you not want kids? And so for a business marriage, I think it's really good to dig a little deeper before you get in bed, quote unquote, with somebody you're going to be doing business with for a very long time and who's, you're relying on them.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people, you know, who are trying to find a co-founder, they somehow really center around the idea.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's about an idea. Like I could build with Malik anything.
Yes.
Like I could build this elevator pitch, whatever, right? It doesn't matter because we're aligned. We have complementary skill sets, but also we're aligned in terms of our aspirations and our values and our goals. And I think that's the most important thing.
And trust.
And it's a big thing. And obviously it's still a big risk, right? Like you take a really big risk, you know, starting a company with someone. And I think it actually doesn't even matter if you're starting it with a friend, with a spouse, or with someone that you didn't know, you know, 6 months earlier. It's still always a big risk to start something with another person. So at least these early conversations give a bit of an indication. And obviously it helped that we were both very, very excited about this whole space of podcasts. We were both like avid podcast listeners.
So what did you do first to build VOOC? It's a two-sided marketplace. So did you go after the brands first? Did you go after the listeners first?
So we first actually wanted to validate the idea, right? So we had a hypothesis that this is something that's
validation.
Really needed, right? So we wanted to validate. And we did manually. I called up a bunch of podcasts, first in Singapore, actually, and a bunch of brands, and I was asking them a lot of questions. And then we basically hustled together one podcast brand match.
Yes.
So we got our first client, actually, before we ever made any pitches to anybody, we got the first client.
And did you feel like you didn't even deserve a fee? Like this was just a...
Yeah, no, we didn't take any fee. Yeah. Like, no, it
this
was just
the
like...
first thing that we want to prove that it works.
Exactly, yeah. So we had a landing page and that's it. and one client. And then we pitched and we got a little initial funding, but also started to realize that this whole market is way, way bigger in the States.
Yeah.
Which is why we then decided that we should look into this market and come to New York and have a look at, you know, kind of be here on the ground and see if indeed whatever we're building resonates.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks after we got the funding, we were on the plane on our way to New York.
What scale of funding are we talking? You know, like enough to keep you for a year, or just like pay your rent for a month?
Yeah, that was like about a 6 month runway.
That's pretty good.
Well, I mean, it's definitely a start. And then we realized when we came here that it definitely resonates. Everybody's talking about podcasting,
yes.
Like whether it is investors, whether it is companies, whether it is accelerators. They don't even need us to explain why this is, you know, an up and coming, industry. They did not even want us to talk about why this is a problem. They're like, we get it. You're solving a problem that exists.
Yeah.
So that's been very exciting to hear. And since then, yeah, we've built our first beta of the platform. We have 500,000 podcasts in the database.
So let's talk about the artificial intelligence. And, you know, this sounds, when did you even decide to like invest in this technology and build this technology, or, you know, why?
So we decided from the very get-go, because right now, the way how brands can find podcasts mainly is through either Googling or going to agencies that work with a set number of podcasts, and they'll say, hey, if you're looking for this demographic, we have someone in our catalog and they have some ad inventory, you can work with them. But we believe that you are what you listen to. Uh-huh. And so we want to bring a new element, which is the audio analysis, right? So we believe that actually what tells more about the listeners, not necessarily their age, but the content that they listen to, what they are interested in, what they're excited about, what are they spending time listening to. And if you're a brand that wants to reach out to conscious consumer, right, doesn't matter if they're 20 or 30 or 50, what matters a lot is the kind of content that they listen to. If they listen to food podcasts that are talking about urban farming and locally produced food and meatless meat and so on, they probably are quite conscious consumers themselves, right?
Yeah.
So even if you are a shoe brand, you could target people listening to food podcasts that care about conscious choices, right?
Indeed.
And so we started thinking how we can help brands to really find their target audience that align with their brand. Mm. And so what we're doing right now is we're actually analyzing the audio of all the podcasted episodes, pulling up things like sentiment, word clouds, and correlations between different topics. And based on that, the platform makes smart recommendations for brands and what kind of podcast they should work with.
That is so intelligent.
Yeah.
And it should work.
I mean, and it does work, right? And what's really interesting is our first step is to help match brands with podcasts for, you know, advertising or other branded collaboration. But going forward, we really want to become the leader in audio intelligence space in general.
Mm-hmm.
And help companies make better decisions about their customers, product, or their market based on insights from podcasts. So for example, we could say, hey, in the past month, the top 100 female podcasters were talking about these topics, and this was the sentiment, and this is how these topics actually mirror the public conversation around economics or climate change or politics or whatnot, right?
Yeah. So you're going to find trends that are actionable, that are relevant to business, that can be capitalized upon, people are consumers of your... Now, here's a question for you. Your business model, are you a business to business, B2B to C, B2C?
We're B2B. So basically our clients are brands and companies that want to find podcasts to work with. And podcasts are basically our supply, but they're also our community. They're really at the center of what we do. And we, you know, our goal is to help them to monetize and to help them find exciting, collaborators to work with.
That is so great. When you're a business that's using Zvook, and you enter in something that's relevant right now, which is I don't know, the Olympics, say,
mm-hmm.
That's too far out. What's something relevant now? I'm not thinking.
Christmas?
yeah. So you'll enter in Christmas in Zvuk, and then like, what do you get? A list of podcasts with like what does it sort of look like?
Yeah, so I think that we just want to go beyond just generic keywords, right? Like Christmas or like men or women listeners or whatever the listeners that are based in US or whatnot. We really want you to describe exactly who your target audience is. What's the persona that you're trying to reach out to?
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is there's increasingly, I think, brands have started to realize the importance of not just direct response campaigns, but really yeah. brand awareness campaigns, right? How important storytelling is in reaching your customers, how important it is that you engage with them, share your stories and share your values. And podcasts as a medium is a very intimate medium. People choose to listen to it. You're in somebody's head,
yeah.
literally. And it's a fantastic way to actually communicate to your target audience. And I think that if you think about, you know, the biggest group of podcast listeners are actually millennials and Gen Z. That's almost half of the listeners. And those are also the people that traditionally are not exposed to a lot of ads, right? I mean, we subscribe to premium platforms that very often are ad-free. So this group of people is kind of like ad avoiders, if you wish. And they're the kind of people that... And we, and I kind of belong in that group as well. We want brands to talk to us. We don't want them to sell to us. We want them to talk to us and to listen to us and to understand us. And podcast is a fantastic medium to do that, which is why we believe that this whole brand alignment is so important. It's not just about placing an ad that, you know, gives you the best ROI, click through and whatnot. It's really trying to find the audience that yeah. is the best for you and for your message.
So you're thinking at an even higher level than just
way higher.
Direct, you know, return on investment.
Way, way higher.
You want to create lasting brand relationships.
Yes, and I think that, you know, in this kind of whole world of like consumption and maybe overconsumption, I think the brands are going to really come out, you know, as winners are the ones that are going to be able to engage with their audience and go and see beyond just, you know, direct sales, but actually engage with their target audience and understand them and speak the same language.
So what do you think about the whole like nano influencers, less than 100 followers and the step up from that, I don't know, micro or mini or, you know, and then actual, like, how do you think about that whole stratification of, you know, are you only targeting high end or are you targeting the long tail?
We're exactly targeting the long tail, actually.
Hey,
I mean, exactly, right? This guy. I mean, no, but it's true, right? And we've spoken with a lot of agencies and brands, and we've asked them, like, you know, how important is reach versus engagement versus, you know, the relevance of the audience? And everybody says, I don't care if there are a million listeners somewhere. I could actually work with, say, an influencer or a podcaster that has 10,000 listeners and 9,000 out of them are our relevant target group. They're going to engage with my brand,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. If you have an audience of only 10,000 or 5,000, but it's super hyper, you know, focused on one topic, that's super valuable.
Exactly.
That's worth more than gold.
Exactly. And we believe that that's really a win-win-win situation. It's a win for the listener as well, right? Because the listener will say, hey, that's so fantastic. I learned about a new company or product or service that I didn't know about, but it's so relevant to me, right? So everybody wins in that equation. And that's really what we want to foster and facilitate.
So I have two final questions. But before I get to that, did I miss anything?
No, I mean, there's so much. I could talk about podcasts and this whole medium for a long time. No, I just think that, you know, there's a shift that's happening right now. There's a whole new generation that's kind of evoking, and we call it the earbud generation,
yeah.
right? So everybody, if you look around and on subway or on the streets, everybody's listening to something. And so we really believe that the next wave of influencers is audio storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, brands brands and companies that want to work with these influencers will have to adjust and their thinking as well, and understand that it's not just about the reach, it's not just about direct response, it's about engagement and it's about authenticity.
Well, I think the future we're living in now, and that's only coming more, is, you know, people like me who have their own show, or people like you who started your own wine and startups podcast. These are not traditional radio personalities. Like, everybody has the potential to have their own show now.
Yeah.
So this is a new market, and, you know, this is such an exciting future. And I think we need a company that understands things from the ground up, you know, and I think you're gonna do it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's very exciting. I think podcasts give a voice to everybody, right? And I think that's what's really empowering about this whole medium, is that everybody has a voice.
So here's my two final questions, which is, first question is, what are your biggest challenges right now? And I know I asked you that at the event, but I just want to do it one more time.
Well, at the event, I think I was in kind of a bit of a pitch mode, in a sense. I mean, I think, you know, we're a very young startup. We're less than 1 year old. And I mean, the challenges for me as a co-founder and as CEO as well is really to identify, you know, the priorities. I think a lot of entrepreneurs probably share this challenge. You have a to-do list, which is like 200 different points, and everything is a priority. Everything is urgent, everything is exciting. You want to do a whole bunch of different things. So really kind of cutting through that noise as a CEO and as an entrepreneur, and understanding what is the absolute most critical thing that you have to focus on. And I kind of have to, you know, I do this almost on a daily basis when I try to take a step back and try to think, okay, what I'm doing right now, is this the most critical thing for me to do? Is this bringing us forward? Is this adding the most value to our business as it is right now? I think that's really the most challenging part, because there are so many, and maybe it's because we're in this very exciting, you know, space of podcasting. On a daily basis, we get people reach out to us and say, hey, I have this idea, I have a podcast, do you guys want to do this and that and the other, let's work together. There's so many opportunities, and we just have to keep our eyes on the prize, in a sense, and be very, very focused and kind of identify what brings us to our goal and what we want to achieve in our vision.
So what is your vision? What can you state it for me, if it exists yet? Or
Well, I mean, we want to be the leader in audio intelligence space. We want to understand how we can best help companies and individuals within those companies make better decisions based on the audio intelligence. And we want to help empower audio storytellers by giving them, you know, easier ways to monetize their content, but also just making sure that their voice are not just heard, but they're really taken into account when companies make decisions, when the public sector makes decisions. And I think that's a really exciting and inspiring goal for us to work towards.
So here's the final question, and I'll do it with a nice background. Anna, this is, I think, the most important question. This is my signature question. So what I want to know is, Anna, how do you think you have grown as a CEO?
Wow, that's a big question. I mean, I think one of the things that I've really identified is I've become much more confident. It doesn't mean that I know better, but it means that I'm more okay with decisions that I make. I second guess way less myself and my abilities to, you know, drive my business. I think when you're younger, or when you're, you know, just starting out, you tend to listen to everybody around you, you tend to second guess. There's so much advice coming from everywhere. And I think the more you do this and the more comfortable you become with the role, the more confident you become. And doesn't mean that I know I'm making all the right decisions and I still do a lot of mistakes, but I'm okay with that. And that's a feeling that's very empowering, because then I can focus and channel my mental capacity on not worrying about what someone thinks about my decision or whether or not I made the right one, but actually focusing on the right things, on getting things forward. And yeah, it's a very empowering feeling.
That's so fantastic. And I really think that that theme of confidence is resonating with a lot of the women entrepreneurs I've had on this show. So on that note, that was such a great answer. This has been so much fun. Thank you for doing the heels.
Thank you. Thanks for leading me through the mud, the stairs, the streets of New York in my heels. It was a lot of fun.
Okay. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Hunter.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh. Oh my gosh, look at them, look at them.
Maybe there's a new category of adventure athleisure heels.
Yes, well, you know, I used to write a blog before called Success in High Heels.
Uh-huh.
That was about like my life in Asia and whatnot.